Chapter 6. Alex. "Hey, Bobby," Alex said to his hand terminal's camera. "I'm going to be downstairs in Mariner for a week or two, staying with a cousin. I was wondering if you wanted to get lunch while I'm in town." He ended the message and sent it, put his hand terminal back in his pocket, fidgeted, took it out again. He started paging back through his contacts, looking for another distraction. With every minute, he came closer to the thin exosphere of home. They were already inside the orbit of Phobos, and the now invisibly thin scatter of gravel that people called the Deimos Ring. The dropship didn't have screens, but from here he'd have been able to see the massive steel of Hecate Base spilling up the side of Olympus Mons. He'd been a boot there after he joined the Navy. Mariner Valley had been one of the first large-scale settlements on Mars. 5 linked neighborhoods that burrowed into the sides of the vast canyons, huddling under the stone and regolith. The network of bridges and tubes that linked them were called Hyja, because the westernmost bridge structures and the trailing tubes made a figure like a cartoon jellyfish. The later high-speed line to Londres Nova was a spear in the jellyfish's crown. 3 waves of Chinese and Indian colonists dug deep into the dry soil there, eking out a thin, perilous existence, pushing the limits of human habitation and ability. His family had been one of them. He'd been an only child to older parents. He had no nieces or nephews, but the variety of Kamal cousins in the valley were enough that he could go from one guest room to another for months without wearing out his welcome at any one of them. The drop ship shuddered, the atmosphere outside thick enough now to cause turbulence. The acceleration alarm chimed pleasantly, and a recorded voice instructed him and the other passengers to check the straps on their gel couches and put any objects more than 2 kilos into the lockers set into the wall at their sides. The braking burn would commence in 30 seconds and reach a maximum burn of 3 Gs. The automated concern made that sound like a lot, but he supposed some folks would be impressed. He put his hand terminal in the locker, cycled it closed, and waited for the braking rockets to push him back into his couch. In one of the other compartments, a baby was crying. The countdown tones began, a music of converging intervals distinguishable in any language. When the tones resolved into a gentle and reassuring chord, the burn kicked in, pressing him into the gel. He dozed as the ship rattled and shook. The atmosphere of Mars wasn't thick enough to use it for aerobraking on their steep descent path, but it could still generate a lot of heat. Half awake, he ran through the math of landing, the numbers growing more and more surreal as the light sleep washed over him. If something had gone wrong, a change in the burn, an impact shudder passing through the ship, a shift in the couch's gimbals, he'd have been awake and alert in an instant. But nothing happened. So nothing happened. As homecomings went, it wasn't bad. The port proper was at the base of the valley. 6.5 kilometers of stone rose up from the pads, the strip of sky above them hardly more than 30 degrees from rim to rim. The processing station was one of the oldest buildings in Mariner, its massive, clear dome built with the dual purposes of blocking radiation and providing a view that would impress with its scale. The canyons ran to the east, rugged and craggy and beautiful. Lights glittered from the canyon sides where the neighborhoods impinged out from the rock, the homes of the insanely wealthy, trading the safety of deep stone for the status of an actual exterior window. A transport flyer passed, hugging low to the ground where the relatively thick air gave its gossamer wings a little more purchase. Once upon a time, the data said, Mars had been the home of its own biosphere. Rain had fallen here. Rivers had flowed. Not, perhaps, in the geologic eye-blink of human history, but once. And would, the terraformers promised, again. Not in their lifetimes or their children's, but one day. Alex waited in the customs queue, looking up. The pull of the planet, only about 1/3 G, felt strange. No matter what the math said, thrust gravity felt different than being down a well. Between the magnificence of the canyons and the eeriness of his weight, Alex felt the anxiety growing in his chest. He was here. He was home. The man processing the arriving travelers wore a thick mustache, white with a tinge of red. His eyes were bloodshot and his expression glum.
Business or pleasure?
Neither one, Alex drawled. I'm here to see the ex-wife. The man gave a quick smile. That going to be a business meeting or pleasure?
Let's call it not business, Alex said.
The processor stroked the screen of his terminal, nodded toward the camera. As the system confirmed that he was who he claimed to be, Alex wondered why he'd said that. He hadn't said that Tally was a shrew, he hadn't insulted her, but he'd leaned on the assumption for a quick joke. He felt like she deserved better from him. Probably she did.
Enjoy your stay, the processing man said, and Alex was free to enter the world he'd left.
His cousin Min stood in the waiting area. She was 10 years younger than him, the last vestiges of youth falling from her and the first comfortable heft of middle age creeping in. Her smile belonged to a little girl he'd known once.
Hey there, partner, she said, the mariner drawl probably half a degree thicker than it normally was. What brings you round these parts?
More sentiment than sense, Alex said, opening his arms. They embraced for a moment.
You got any luggage? Min asked.
Traveling light.
Fair enough. I've got a cart down at the front.
Alex hoisted an eyebrow. You didn't need to do that.
They're cheaper than they used to be.
The kids aren't back from Lower U for another 4 hours. You got anything you want to do before we've got them underfoot?
The only two things I've been looking forward to were seeing people and a bowl of Hassan's noodles.
The look of embarrassment passed over Min's face and vanished again in an eye blink.
There's a great noodle shop over on the south face. Garlic sauce that'll knock you sideways. But Hassan packed it in about 4 years ago.
Ah. No, it's all right.
The thing about Hassan's wasn't that they were good.
Well, now that's the truth. It's just that they were his. The cart was a common electric, wider and tougher than the ones they used on stations. The tires were clear polymer that wouldn't streak the floors of the corridors. Alex slid into the passenger seat, Min taking the controls. They talked about small, domestic things. Who in the family was getting married? Who was getting divorced? Who was moving and where? A surprising number of Min's siblings were on ships headed for the ring, and though she didn't say it outright, he had the sense that she was more interested in hearing about what he'd seen on the other side of it than in him. They passed down a long access tunnel and then across one of the linking bridges to Bunker Hill. It was the neighborhood where Alex had grown up. His father's ashes were in the crypt at the synagogue. His mother's had been scattered over the Ophir Kasmata. The first girl he'd ever kissed had lived in rooms 2 corridors down from the place Min's family was in now. His best friend growing up had been an ethnic Chinese boy named Johnny Zhu, who lived with an older brother and sister on the other side of the canyon. Driving along the corridors now, the memories flooded him. The curve of the corridor where the Lone Star Sharabagar had held weekend dance and drinking contests. The time when he was 9 that he'd been caught stealing gum from the bodega at the corner of Dallas Corridor and Nurenji. Getting violently sick in the bathrooms at the Alamo Mall Toll Plaza. 1,000 things like them probably happened every day. The only thing that made Alex's experiences different at all was that they were his. He didn't recognize for a while what was making him uncomfortable. Like the difference between thrust and planetary gravity, the emptiness of the corridors was almost too subtle to notice at first. Even as Min drove deeper into the neighborhood, it was the lights he noticed, and then the locks. All along the corridors, scattered like a handful of thrown sand, rooms and businesses were closed, the windows dark. That in itself didn't mean much, but Alex noticed first one, then a few, then, like flowers in a meadow, a sudden spread of the clunky external locks that landlords and security put on doors when the units weren't in use. He kept up his end of the banter with his cousin, but he started counting as they drove. In the next 100 doors, homes, businesses, maintenance closets, schools, 21 weren't in use. As Min pulled the cart to a halt at her own doorway,
He mentioned it. Yep, she said with a lightness that seemed forced. Ghost world. Somewhere in the years he'd been gone, Talissa had moved. The old rooms they'd had together were in Ballard, tucked in between the naval station and the old water processing plant. According to the local directories, she was in Galveston Shallow now. It wasn't the neighborhood he'd imagined for her, but things changed. Maybe she'd come into money. He hoped so. Anything that had made her life better, he was in favor of. The corridors of Galveston Shallow were wide. Half the light came down shafts from the surface, the actual light of the sun strung through a series of transparent shielding to keep the radiation to a minimum. The wide, sloping ceilings gave the place a sense of being natural, almost organic, and the smell of the mechanical air recyclers was nearly hidden by the rich, loamy scents of growing plants. Wide swaths of greenery filled the common areas with devil's ivy and snake plant, the sorts of things that cranked out a lot of oxygen. The moisture in the air was strange and soothing. This, Alex realized, was the dream of Mars made real, if small. The terraforming project would make the whole planet like this someday, if it worked. Flora and fauna and air and water. Someday, centuries after he was gone, people might walk on the surface of Mars, surrounded by plants like these. Might feel the real sun against their skins. He was distracting himself. He checked his position on his hand terminal against Tally's new address. His heart was going faster than usual, and he wasn't sure what to do with his hands. He wondered what she'd say, how she'd look at him. Anger or joy would both be justified. Still, he hoped for joy. His plan, find the place, gather himself, and ring the bell, failed because as soon as he turned the last curve to her rooms, he saw her. She was kneeling in among the plants in the common space, a trowel in one hand. She wore thick canvas work pants smeared with soil, and a pale brown shirt with a wealth of pockets and loops for gardener's tools, most of them empty. Her hair was a rich brown, so free of gray it had to be dyed. Her face was wider, thicker at the cheeks. Time had been kind to her. She wasn't beautiful. Maybe she'd never been beautiful, but she was handsome. And she was Talissa. Alex felt a smile twitch at his lips, born more from anxiety than pleasure. He pushed his hands into his pockets and ambled over, trying to seem casual. Tally looked up from her work, then down. Her shoulders tensed, and she looked up again, staring in his direction. He lifted a hand, palm out. "Alex," she said as he reached the edge of the garden space. "Hey, Tally," he said. When she spoke, the only thing in her voice was a flat disbelief. "What are you doing here?" "I had some downtime while my ship's getting fixed up. Thought I'd come back to the old stomping ground. Touch base with folks, you know." Talissa nodded, her mouth taking the uneven curl that meant she was thinking hard. Maybe he should have reached out with a message before he came. Only it had seemed to him this was a meeting that should be face to face. "Well," she said, "all right. I don't want to interrupt, but maybe when you're done, I could buy you a cup of tea." Tally rolled back onto her heels and tilted her head. "Alex, stop it. What are you doing here?" "Nothing," he said. "No, something. You're here for something." "Really, I'm not. I just..." "Don't," she said conversationally. "Don't bullshit me. No one just shows up at their ex-wife's house out of the blue because they thought a cup of tea sounded nice." "Well, all right," Alex said. "But I thought..." Tally shook her head and turned back to digging through the black soil. "Thought what? That we get a drink together? Talk about old times, get a little maudlin? Maybe fall into bed for nostalgia's sake?" "What? No, I'm not. Please don't make me be the bad guy here. I have a rich, full, complex life that you chose not to be a part of. I have a lot on my plate just now that I don't actually want to share with you, and comforting the guy who walked out on me umpteen years ago because he's, I don't know, having his midlife crisis, it's not my priority, and it's not something that's fair to expect of me." Oh, Alex said. His belly felt like he'd swallowed a tungsten slug. His face felt flushed. She sighed, looking up at him. Her expression wasn't cruel, wasn't even unkind. Tired, maybe. I'm sorry, she said. We're a couple people who used to know each other. At this point, we're maybe even a little less than that. I understand. I'm sorry. I didn't put you in this position. You put me in it. I was just working with my plants. I know. I didn't mean to discomfort you. Not now and not before. Not before? Before when you walked out on me? It wasn't what I meant to have happen. And it wasn't about you or... She shook her head sharply, grimacing as she did. No, not gonna do this. Alex, we're talking about the past. That's the conversation I just said I don't want to have, all right? All right. Okay. Sorry if things are rough. I'll be fine, she said. He lifted his hand again, the same gesture he'd made walking up to her, but with a different meaning now. He turned. He walked away. The humiliation was like a weight on his chest. The urge to turn back, to have one last look in case maybe she was looking at him, was almost too much to resist. He resisted it. She was right. It was why he'd appeared on her doorstep without warning. Because he'd known that if she said no, he had to respect that. And somewhere in the back of his mind, he'd thought that if they were there, breathing the same air, it would be harder for her to turn him away. And maybe it had been. Maybe what he'd done was actually make it worse for her. The first bar he came to was named Los Compadres, and the air inside it smelled of hops and overheated cheese. The man behind the bar looked barely old enough to drink, his sallow skin set off by ruddy hair and a mustache that could generously be called aspirational. Alex took a high stool and ordered a whiskey. "Little early in the day for celebration," the barkeep said as he poured. "What's the occasion?" "It turns out," Alex said, exaggerating his Mariner Valley drawl just a little for the effect, "that sometimes I'm an asshole." "Hard truth?" "It is." "You expect drinking alone to improve that?" "Nope, just observing the traditions of alienated masculine pain." "Fair enough," the barkeep said. "Want some food with it?" "I'd look at a menu." Half an hour later, he was only halfway through the drink. The bar was starting to fill up, which meant maybe 20 people in a space that would have taken 70. Ranchero music played from hidden speakers. The thought of going back to his cousins and pretending to be cheerful was only a half a degree worse than continuing to sit in the bar, waiting for his self-pity to fade. He kept trying to think about what he could have said or done differently that would have made any difference. So far, the best he'd come up with was, "Don't walk out on your wife," which is about the same thing as saying, "Be someone else." His hand terminal buzzed. He pulled it up, a written message tagged from Bobby Draper. "Hey, Alex, sorry it took so long to get back to you. Things are weirdly busy. Yes, if you're in town, I'd like to meet with you. Nay, have a favor to ask if you're up for it. Swing by any time." Her address was in Londres Nova. Alex tapped it and the screen shifted to a map. He wasn't far from the express tube. He could be out there by supper. He touched the bar top with his hand terminal, paid for the drink, and stretched. In the corridor, a cart had broken down, and half a dozen maintenance workers were clumped around it. A woman with skin the color of milk walking past did a subtle double take when Alex nodded. Wondering, he guessed, whether he was the pilot for James Holden. He walked on before she could ask the question. Yeah, it would be good to see Bobby.